Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. No guests today, so we're going to pop the caller lines open for those of you who are willing to ring in and tell us your views. Of course, if it's only one caller calling in, we won't take the call, but, you know, just more than enough would be great. All right, so the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, we want to go and address a little bit of the old political issues in it tonight, and There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in New Zealand with politics, so I've got a few articles here from the New Zealand Herald to read out. And I was just wondering, you know, am I just covering things that the mainstream media are covering just to try and click whore and so on and so forth? The answer is obviously yes. All right, so our very first article that we have here today, Michael Cox. I love that when political commentators are for the mainstream media are named ironically like that. Yearning for yesteryear's policies is a mistake. Does this person realize that yesteryear's policies is the only thing we've had since like the late 70s? Sell off the country to foreign banks. That's the yesteryear interests. I mean, am I wrong here? Have I gotten this? Have I gotten some wires crossed? I don't think so. Brian Gould's oft-printed politically contentious views are a product of his past. Who is Brian Gould? I guess we'll find out. He obviously finds the policies practiced by John Key and Bill English hard to take and suggests that he could follow the interventionist Keynesian economics of yesteryear. He even implies that budget surpluses are somehow evil. Well, of course they're somehow evil, because it means that you'd actually get on top of paying off your debt to the bankers that own your entire frickin' economy. Brian and I go a long way. We'll go back a long way. Yeah, almost backwards as far as, you know, sacrificing children in order to, I don't know, perhaps get a higher crop yield. I met him briefly when, as a Rhodes Scholar, here we go. Anyway, know who Cecil Rhodes is? The Rhodes Scholarship, you know, one of the richest men that the British Empire ever produced. Named a country after himself called Rhodesia, later became Zimbabwe, and they kicked all the white farmers out. He set up seven wills to advance the British Empire through making a secret society. And only one of those wills has ever been made public. The Rhodes Scholarship, where they recruit the best and the brightest to put into the leadership positions so that they'll all be fully indoctrinated in his kind of thinking, so that the British Empire, aka the New World Order, will be the only thing that exists. You know? That's what's happening here. And you know, they just come out and admit it, but they don't. I don't think there's anything bad about it. I think it's good, you know, implementing draconian New World Order. I don't give a frack about the people or their health or their future or sovereignty or anything that actually defined the country at all. I'm a Rhodes Scholar, you know. I've got scholastic ability. He was studying law at Oxford University. He said he was a gownie and I was a, quote, townie. My home was in a village just outside Oxford, and I was home on leave from my position as a ship's mate, having just visited New Zealand. There's a Kiwi over by the bar, pointed out an old school friend. His name is Brian Gould. He and I shared a couple of half pints of local warm beer at the Turf, a pub tucked in just behind New College. He was obviously very bright and enjoying the university life. Yes, especially all the copious quantities of cocaine he was sticking up his nostril. That's just an allegation. I'm just kidding. But he probably did even worse. Since then, I have followed his career with interest. He was a young lad from Waipa, doing well in London, first as a diplomat and then as an MP for the British Labour Party. What was I talking about? The Rhodes Scholarship and advancing the aims of the British Empire, and then he's an MP for the British Labour Party. Brian was in and out of British parliamentary seats, finishing up as MP for Dagenham in 1983. In 92, he stood for the leadership of his Labour Party following the resignation of Neil Kinnock. Even for the British Labour Party, Brian was considered pretty left-wing and failed in his leadership bids. Oh, and just like every other really crazy draconian socialist kind of policy or whatever, they're all probably members of the Fabian Society. What's the symbol of the Fabian Society again? Isn't it a wolf in sheep's clothing? You know? Does anybody else realise that there is a socialist conspiracy to take over the world or a socialist agenda? Because it's not a conspiracy, because conspiracies are kept secret. The socialist agenda is actually very prominent and widely talked about and admitted, and it's undeniable, and almost every single policy that a socialist could frickin' dream of is being passed as we speak. Okay? They're destroying business by putting up red tape everywhere. They're destroying people's ability to be independent by getting them all on welfare and so on and so forth. We are starting to live in a socialist dream. There ain't going to be no freedom. Ain't going to be no liberty. Ain't going to be no personal responsibility. Okay? Everything will be taken care of for you by the daddy state. Incidentally, what's communism famous for? It's the most efficient killing machine in all history, responsible for more deaths in peacetime than any other factor. factor killed more people during peacetime than died in all wars of the 20th century combined. This is a great socialist utopia we're talking about here. Which the Rhodes Scholarship all love, you know, because, hey, you know what socialism does? Takes away everybody's rights, confiscates everybody's wealth, and just gives it to the elite. Not entirely dissimilar from what the National Party or any other kind of party in every single fucking country in this world is doing. It's because it's all part of the socialist agenda, okay? They've made the Democrats in the United States go from, you know, possibly being maybe a little bit left of the center to way, way down the end there. And they've made the alleged right-wingers, who're supposed to be, you know, a little bit right of the center, just a little bit further left than anybody could ever conceive possible. So your choices are hardcore socialism or softcore socialism that will develop itself into hardcore socialism. So basically, it's hardcore socialism or bust. That's the only choices we've got in America. It's the same choice that we got here in New Zealand. And here we are. Here's a article in the New Zealand Herald saying, oh, you know, we don't want to repeat these failed policies of the past, acting like it's one party or one person or anything like that. They're all the same kettle of freaking fish. This is a tuna fish sandwich with improper mayonnaise. These people are not making something worth swallowing. It is only worth regurgitating. Because you don't want to ingest the poison. Bryan resigned from British politics in 1994 to return to New Zealand to taking up the vice chancellor's job at Waikato University. He was the chancellor of vice. That's right. In a university. He lasted in that job for 10 years, and we met again as fellow trustees of the University Foundation. And have you noticed also how these Rhodes Scholars and all of these other icons of officialdom, and this is the other thing that really frustrates me out, appeal to officialdom, appeal to authority. Look, just because somebody's got some kind of position, some kind of title, some kind of a suit and tie, you know, with a collar around their neck or cuffs around their wrist or whatever the frack, doesn't mean that they're an authority on all things that are of that particular persuasion. If anything, it probably means that they know very little about it and are probably just going to try and brainwash the living frack out of you so that you believe what BS they're shoveling so that you live your life as a slave. Fundraising for and building the splendid performance arts center, and I wanted to see him go from the vice chancellor's role. He did a good job on the foundation. Now he is writing these hard-hitting columns, and hopefully readers can now understand a little of what drives him to his Fabian and Keynesian views. Remember how I mentioned Fabian socialism? Remember how I talked about the wolf in sheep's clothing? And boom, there it is. This guy's a new world order plant. Okay, this Bryan Gould dude. Okay, I hate to use guilt by association, but if you're part of an association that's very guilty, I think that implies that there is a little bit of guilt by association. You know what I'm saying? Even if they move to me. How can it be any more obvious? I mean, you know, when you look at the US administration, you see Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, et cetera, bankers, Zionists, yada, yada. Okay. It's the same MO. And I can guarantee you, this is my assumption. Every freaking party in every freaking Western nation is stacked to the gills with people of that persuasion. You know, whether they be Fabians, whether they be Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, and there's equivalents all the year round. I can guarantee you, without even looking at it, just by the assumption, just by looking at the policies that these parties implement, that they're all a part of the same scamming artist group called the New World Order. They are puppets. They are here to deceive and to lead us into a dark future. A future so dark that one might not even scarcely believe that it's real life. It'll look like a cartoon. Like a really dark futuristic manga cartoon. Oh yeah. Like something real bad. Oh my God. Oh my God. It'd be so bad, man. We won't even be able to We won't even be able to fathom it. You're going to kill everybody, you know? I mean, this is what I don't get about people and why they can still discuss politics without throwing up in their mouth a little. These people are playing part in the scheme to kill you. All of you. To sterilize you. To toxify you. And they still feel like playing politics? You still think like voting's enough, like once in every frickin' 3 or 4 or 5, whatever, however many years that your scumbaggery leader decides to vote for another dictator who will also ignore you and ruthlessly implement the agenda of the New World Order? They still want to play politics over this? You know? As if people got a memory. It lasts about 2 minutes. You know, I'm in politics, screwed a few people over. Okay, sweet ass, not a problem. Wait, hold on a second. But he screwed people over while he was in politics. Yeah, I know, but I forgot about that. So I'm just going to vote for him again. Are you retarded? No, I'm not retarded. I'm just voting for a person who I despise, who I know is going to rape and destroy my country. Okay? What's wrong with that? Everything? Yeah, but bro, you know, what other choice have we got? How about actually resisting? How about getting off your ass and doing something to save your country from a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbagger? Maybe that might be an idea worthy of merit, you know? Perhaps not selling out every single man, woman, and child in your country to a criminal scum that want to get you into debt and gradually exterminate you in like a FEMA camp or something. Maybe that's the way to go. As opposed to voting for the very people who are trying to kill you. I would imagine Brian would have found Tony Blair's new Labour views pretty hard to swallow as well. Yeah, probably because they weren't radical enough to destroy the UK with immigration to the point where now it's like 6 out of 10 children or something like that in London schools have English as a second language. Okay, they're trying, and it's not like, oh, I'm racist. It's when you destroy somebody's culture, the easiest way to do it is bring people of a different culture into that to blend it until eventually you won't realize what your culture is anymore, and then you won't defend it when somebody tries to take it over. Okay, if you destroy national pride, national identity, it's very easy to take over a country, and they're just using people of a different race and a different creed or whatever that really have nothing to do with the agenda other than the fact that they don't want to live in a country that doesn't have any freedom, and so they move into our countries, and then our countries react, and people do get racist, and people do get angry, and they wind up doing a whole bunch of nasty stuff, and then they get taken all their freedoms and liberties taken off them anyway. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated,
welcome back,
crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppets, gangsters, using all the...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. 5 days a week, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 Eastern, 11 till 1 GMT, that's in the middle of the night. And in New Zealand, I think it's around about 10 till midday. And as soon as we move into summery time, when we get daylight savings back, it'll be pushed back to like 11 till 1. And then it'll be pushed back again when the United States goes into daylight savings time, back to midday through 2 p.m. For the summer schedule, 5 days a week. Now, in New Zealand, 5 days a week means Tuesday through Saturday because it's the American Monday through Friday because we broadcast live from the future. Indeed. Now, coming back to this, the old Keynesian, John Maynard Keynes. Now, wait, wasn't he like the lead singer at all? Oh, no, that was Maynard James Keating or maybe it was Ronan Keating. John Maynard Keynes' economic philosophy was also the guiding star of one of our homegrown former ministers of finance and prime minister, Robert David Mulvey. Old Rob Muldoon. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Rob Muldoon's a classic. A classic. I sat alongside him in the National Party caucus room as he bludgeoned our fragile economy in a debilitating Keynesian way. A debilitating Keynesian way, oh yeah. He controlled prices, wages, interest rates, and dividends, and did nothing to stop the spend and pray mentality of the 1970s. It was a dismal failure, and the electorate sacked us as government for it. It took Roger Douglas's ministers of finance to straighten up our small economy, straighten it up by selling it all out to foreign interests and then giving the control of it to the Reserve Bank governor who chucked the interest rates up so high that it made like about 10% of the country unemployed. And the rest of them lost all of their wealth because they couldn't pay their loans and stuff anymore. Okay, that's what they call shoring up and fixing the economy. Out to the frickin' New World Order. For a payoff of like what? Allegedly, Roger Douglas took a payoff from all these world bankers, right? Of like 25 grand or something pitifully small in order to sell the entire nation out to evil scumbaggery agents of the New World Order. You know? This country's a cheap place to bribe in, mate, if you know the right people. Mm-hmm. As the shadow finance spokesman of the national opposition at this time, I could only watch in awe as Roger did all the right things, introduced all the economic policies one would expect from a Tory regime. It was the worst job I ever had. Over many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. We understand the role of government well and react when politicians overstep the mark. What country is this guy living in? Kiwis love being controlled. They love being slaves. They never freaking resist one freaking iota. They say that they don't like it, but they just put up with it as if they don't give a frack. Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to really, really get angry with my countrymen these days, bae. Mm-hmm. We freaking derelict in your duties. Duty to the nation. I don't give a frack whether you think you're a citizen or a good parent or a good business person or whatever. You all contribute to the economy somehow. But at the end of the day, when scumbaggery agents of the New World Order come in and take over this country, you don't do Shiite Muslim about it, do you? Other than complain like a bunch of sheep going, oh, we don't want to go into the slaughterhouse. Slaughterhouses are bad. But you still walk in. And you still get your throat cut, and you still get hung out to drip dry. Don't you, New Zealand? You bunch of cowardly scum. You know what? That's a really insulting thing to say to my countrymen, but gosh dang it, if you are one of those cowardly people who would listen to the resistance, watch it happening, and never in any way, shape, or form contribute, then what the hell is the point? All right? What the hell is the point? I mean, come on. Take the bull by the horns. He's charging at you. We're all going to die. Okay? I can't make it clearer than that. You either do something about this and do something effective. You know, protesting doesn't do really enough. You know, my job's just to make sure that people actually hear what the hell is going on. Okay? And if you don't do anything, we're all going to die. All right, I'm very serious when I say I may be saying it with a wee bit of a grin on my face, you know, a wee bit of a smirk, but I actually believe this. I do believe that ruthless, criminal, socialist, Fabian, New World Order, banking scum, when they take over a country, wind up killing any of the people who don't think the way that they do so that they can more easily enslave the rest. You're one of those people, okay? Even if you ain't doing anything, you're still thinking that you don't like it, and you're going to be targeted for extermination sooner or later as soon as they've got enough power to get away with it. Hell, they've probably got enough power to get away with it now, but I don't think it's quite necessary because nobody's actually resisting or doing anything, are they? There's a couple of people, and guess what? Guess who the big resistors to the big massive socialism and takeover of this country are? You guessed it. The frickin' socialists! you go to any protest, and it's just loaded and led with all of these socialists. What are they arguing about? He was like, oh, we don't like tyranny. We don't like government control over the economy. We don't like private corporate interests.
Then why are you advancing socialism? It's giving you the very thing that you want. Why are you protesting it? You should be in Parliament going, yep, 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 and just sitting away and just agreeing with the whole frickin' agenda, because you don't actually really want to resist what's going on, do you? You claim, oh, privacy's a really important thing, and you get out there, protest against the GCSB or whatever. It's socialist policy that's bringing in the GCSB frickin' bill, okay, to control and surveil and make sure nobody got any freedom or frickin' liberty so that they can't resist the elite, who are the biggest socialists of them all, who want to socialize all the problems and privatize all the money and all the resources into their hands so that all of us will be slaves on the socialist global plantation called the New World Order. Okay? That's the plan. If you think I'm crazy for saying it, go ahead. Call me crazy. Call me nuts. Call me any other thing under the sun. You can call me homophobic. You can call me racist. You can call me X number of names. But I'll tell you what. I'm not going to stop saying what I think. You know why? Because if I stop saying what I think, because I'm afraid that people will call me names that have no relevance as a result, I won't need a slave master to tell me what to say or what to think anymore. I'll do it to myself, just like all of you people are doing. All right, you are preventing yourself from saying what you think because you're afraid of being called names that are irrelevant. That is a freaking tragedy. Now, over the many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. I love that line. The average Kiwi is actually true. You know, you don't want to be controlled, do you? You just kind of let it happen, you know, sort of like kids don't want to go to school, but they still go to school. You know, the reason why kids don't want to go to school is because the education sucks and they get bullied all the time. And you basically walk away with a piece of paper that says, hey, you know how to take orders mindlessly and learn stuff that doesn't freaking matter and will never be of use to you in your entire life. Congratulations. Here's a job that you're not qualified enough for because you don't have any experience, because instead of actually giving you experience during schoolwork or anything of that nature or anything like a work ethic trying to instill that into you, you only know how to blindly regurgitate BS. Okay, that's good. That's nice. That's the education's achievement system. It's made a perfect little repetition-loving slave, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then you get a couple more years of it in university and even a couple more years of it in your postgraduate study and then a couple more years as your PhD, which means it's pretty hard to determine anything. That's what a PhD means, pretty hard to determine anything. I like that. Do you like that? We understand the role of government well and react when politicians overstep the mark. I mean, come on. This guy's totally out of touch with reality, isn't he? Polls show that most are reasonably happy with the way we are recovering from the economic downturn. They like Key's style. Recovering from the economic downturn with 3,000 people lining up in South Auckland to get a frickin' supermarket checkout job? With women that have sent out over 1,000 job applications to be a secretary and getting rejected, with some businesses getting as many as 3,000 applications for a single job opening? And they think we're recovering from the downturn in the economy? John Key has destroyed this economy quite well. We've gotten us into more debt than anybody else has ever conceived of. You know, got a $50 billion debt ceiling. $50 billion with a country of 4 million people. What the hell is that? What's that, like 5, 10 million a pop? or something ridiculous. Like everybody in this country owes like what? Close to $1 million? I wonder what the math is on that. It'd be interesting to find out anyway. Over many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. I just don't get this. How could you spend years in politics and determine that people don't want to be controlled? You've been controlling us the whole freaking time, and suddenly you realize that we don't like you anymore? Now, Brian Gould, anyway,
And I find it interesting how his name's Gould, you know? Like he's out of a Michael Jackson thriller video or something. I'm Doc Gould. He advocates that we go back to these heady days of Keynes. His British Labour Party mates didn't like his advocacy, and I'm picking the majority of New Zealanders wouldn't want to go back to the ways of Muldoon. It's a dead economic duck. I'll tell you what, Michael Cox, former National MP. See, this is a Cox criticising a Gould. Those are the choices that we've got here in New Zealand politics. In a nutshell, you've got a choice between a Cox or a Gould. come on. Yeah, I'm not making it up. I'm not making it up. Those are the real names. I mean, come on, bro. Come on, bro. Now, speaking of socialists who are incidentally resisting the New World Order, we got Jane Kelsey. Good old Professor Jane Kelsey. I'm going to see if I can get the thing up on the screen behind me. Yeah, there we are. There we are. Professor Jane Kelsey. Trade talks failing to deliver on deadline. Now, anybody know how the European Union got set up? You know, it was like under Economic Prosperity Partnership or something of that nature. The European Economic Community. What they do is they try to entice you and they get you in with trade deals. And what these trade deals really do is they actually lock you into international governance so that your country doesn't actually have any sovereignty anymore, nor does your business have any protection really of any kind. And they have to compete against global giants that are all controlled by the New World Order, which is not a fair fight, and they can't compete. And so they wind up getting either bought out, sold out, or destroyed entirely. Okay, that's what trade deals do. I hate to put it to you that bluntly, but if you're signing onto a trade deal, it means all local innovative business eventually will be undermined and destroyed and taken over by the New World Order bankers and their associated businesses, Monsanto, so on and so forth. You know the kind of corporate scum that I'm talking about. Like even McDonald's, Jamie Oliver proved it. In court not too long ago, actually, maybe it might be in a couple of months or whatever, won in court that McDonald's is not fit for human consumption. It's not fit for human consumption? Are you saying that they feed like close to 1 billion people a year or something like that and it ain't fit for human consumption? Oh, well, no wonder we've got an obesity epidemic. No wonder we've got a hypertension epidemic. No wonder we've got X amounts of frickin' epidemics, not least of all cancer, which now affects like between 1 in 3 and 1 in 2 people like virtually worldwide. Okay? No wonder. This is what trade deals lock into. You know, because if you come out and you say, hey, McDonald's food ain't fit for human consumption, then McDonald's can sue your country in the world court, which is a corporate court, which they in no small part own. And your country has to pay them fines for messing with their business practice. You know, you're criminals. You're trying to kill us with soft-kill bioweapons locked in 2 beef patties and all special sauce and on a sesame seed bun bioweapon. And you're like, nah. Well... That's messing with our mojo, mate. We don't like that. So what we're going to do is completely destroy your country and give you a massive fine with these courts that we own and control. How about them apples? And you go, oh, well, I really don't like that. And you go, well, I don't give a frack if you like it or not, bro. You signed up to it. Okay. We're going to destroy you. I mean, think about things before you sign them, ladies and gentlemen. What are you? You want to be an easily controlled slave? You know, economically speaking, you want companies to be able to get away with anything they want, and your nation never be able to do anything about it. Okay, sign up to trade deals. Go for your life. You know, what do you got to lose? Sovereignty, prosperity, freedom. You know, all of these kind of things. And then, of course, later on, just like they did with the European Union, they'll just destroy your economy, they'll just collapse your currency, and they'll just turn it into a dog and pony show, election-style process, where nobody gets any freedom, no matter which Herman von Rompuy they elect. It doesn't matter, all right? Nobody knows any of the people who are in control of the whole scheme anyway. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America.
It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence, irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And I must recommend that you listen to the show 5 days a week, all right? Particularly when you're listening to things that you don't agree with or whatever, okay? Because if you're only listening to what you've already at this point familiar with or already listened to and already agree with, you know, that kind of thing, I mean, you're wasting your freaking life. You'll never learn a damn thing at all. And the show always talking about different topics. We've always got different guests, you know? We're always flying way off the handle, going out left field, you know? We'll hit you with things that you didn't even know freaking exist. It okay, and I can guarantee you start listening to the show 5 days a week, you will geometrically increase the amount of knowledge that you have. Everybody goes to work, then comes home, and then thinks that the work is over. No, actually, if you've got a slave job, your work becomes learning when you're not at your slave job, okay? And even when you're at your slave job, you've got to do a bit of learning as well. Otherwise, you won't be able to do your job very well. Speaking of doing jobs pretty well, the good old Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Let's roll through this article here. Jane Kelsey, trade talks failing to deliver on deadline. Question, when is the end game of a negotiation no longer the end game? Answer, when the political forces driving it decide to cut their losses sooner rather than later to minimize the potential loss of face. In this case, the faces being saved are the political leaders of the 12 countries currently negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPPA. Last November, they set a target for concluding the deal by the end of 2013, more than 3 years after they began. The leaders are due to meet again in Bali, Indonesia, in early October on the sidelines of the APEC meeting. APEC is a meeting of chickens, by the way. Missed deadlines risk becoming a habit. They also discredit the hype that the TPPA will deliver gold standard 21st century rules that the other APEC countries, including China, will aspire to sign on to. Yeah. The US, which is driving the project, has a dilemma. Obama needs a deal. He has yet to successfully negotiate a single free trade agreement. His trade office is under sequester and has no budget to continue expensive TPPA negotiations, let alone the new talks on a parallel deal with the European Union. Do you see what I'm talking about? The New World Order agenda, tie the Asian Pacific Union up together in trade deals, then turn us into a place where the decision making can be made centrally, and then you link us up through as other plates in the New World Order system via continental kind of dictatorships. You know, European Union dictates those in Europe, American Union dictates those in America, and then you got the Pacific Union will dictate all of us, and so on and so forth. It'll be union, but these unions don't bring anybody together. They just, unless, of course, it's together in a FEMA camp, of course. Obama also needs the Congress to grant him, quote, fast-track negotiating authority, without which it can pick apart any final agreement that means satisfying multiple conflicting lobbies. Fast track cannot happen before the end of 2013, if at all, but other countries will be wary of signing anything without it. Now, I have this great difficulty, of course, when you're reading out articles like this, not to just sort of go off on a rant, you know, because sometimes you'll just mention things that they mention later on in the article. You know how sometimes you ask in a movie, why is that person standing there? Why do they have that particular kind of cigarette? Wasn't that the last cigarette that the other bad guy was looking at? You just watch the movie. It'll all pan out, I can assure you. Other champions of the TPPA also have a dilemma. New Zealand's Tim Grosser, and remember how I found our names are quite funny, you know? One of the guys that's negotiating our Trans-Pacific Partnership for us, his last name is Grosser, you know? And I couldn't think of anybody Grosser to do it. Will fear for his grand plan that can morph into an Asia-wide free trade deal. He has said no deal is better than a low-quality deal, but no deal may be the result. Deal or no deal, you know? What's behind briefcase number 600? Oh, it's tyranny and scumbaggery and extermination of the vast majority of the population who don't agree with being slaves. Oh, okay. What's in that case over there? I don't know. Could be $200,000. Pushing too hard could be some countries walk away. Chile's former chief negotiator wrote a media column warning the TPPA is a high risk for developing countries. Well, no Shiite Muslim. No Shiite Sherlock. What do you expect? You know, here's what it does. It restricts third world countries so that they stay third world countries and restricts first world countries so that they become third world countries. So that way, everywhere's a third world country, apart from, you know, little hot spots and so on and so forth, where they can have their smart growth cells where everybody's living in a freaking slave block with a camera in every room. And no private transport, just public transport, you know, facial recognition cameras on every street corner and stuff like that. And if you start doing anything or resisting the New World Order and don't want to be a freaking slave in a slave block cell in your little apartment next to train tracks or whatever, we'll just turn your chip off. You can't even buy food. All right, that's basically the end of the story here. All right, everything that I see being implemented in every single country basically ties into this one agenda, the global socialist New World Order Agenda 21 agenda. That's, you know, it's out in the open. And what really frustrates me is that the people who are in, you know, these resistance positions just ain't freaking talking about them. You know, they just, it's like, here I am, Jane Kelsey. I'm trying to expose a massive, nasty agenda, but I'm not going to call it New World Order. I'm not going to call it globalism. I'm not going to call it global socialism. I'm not going to call it tyrannical or anything like that. I'm just going to call it a trade deal and say that it's not fair, okay? And act like it's happening in frickin' isolation because I want this one particular thing to be knocked out of the way. Don't you get it, Jane? They're just going to, like, if this thing doesn't work, they'll just do another thing that does. Until the entire agenda is exposed, no single part of the agenda can really be pushed back, in my opinion. But, you know, I applaud your efforts and what have you for exposing this one particular agenda, probably better than anybody else had, admittedly. But if you keep ignoring the global agenda, it's going to keep continuing, and it won't matter how well you are, how good you are at resisting a singular agenda, there'll be 20 other agendas, you know, coming through. Like, you ever played dodgeball when people are like throwing 20 different balls at you and you catch one of them and you go, ha 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 ha, I caught one of them, as you get hit with 19 other balls? That's what we're doing. All right. The Malaysians are under a huge domestic pressure and are conducting public cost benefit analyses. You know, wow, look, something that they never did for the super city or any other New Zealand policy that they've implemented for the past like 30 or 40 years. A cost-benefit analysis, eh? Who would have thunk it? What a revolutionary thought. They have clear bottom lines and have rejected any firm deadlines. Okay, here's our bottom line. Frack off, TPPA. Frack off. This week's 19th round in Brunei is the first for Japan. The US Congress is demanding Japan makes undeliverable concessions, including accepting rules that target alleged currency manipulation. Well, I wonder if John Key should be targeted there, considering he's a currency manipulator. Or he's just a current manipulator, whatever. I forget the difference. These tensions are producing a classic doublespeak that reiterates the goal for 2013 while anticipating the failure to deliver. 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Trade Representative, their trade minister, declared the negotiations were in their, quote, end game stage. You know, end game. I don't know. Whenever I hear the words end game, I don't think of a nice, fluffy agenda that's really nice for everybody and is going to help everybody. I think about, like, evil, I'm going to kind of, you know, enslave you very slowly like a frog in a boiling pot and then exterminate you kind of agenda. That's what comes to mind when I think about somebody's end game. You know, what's their end game? What are they doing to the... And they come out and they openly say, that, oh, it's the end game, you know. On Thursday and Friday last week, the TPPA ministers, including Grocer, met in Brunei. So as a Grocer Brunei, a Grocer Brown, their four-paragraph statement talked of, quote, entering the final stage.
Entering the final stage, you know.
I mean, can I do that in a Skeletor voice?
We are entering the final stage. And possible landing zones on sensitive and challenging issues, because the people are very scared about the fact that we're going to kill and enslave them, He-Man. Well, we're just going to have to BS them just a little bit, you know, Blues Brothers style. I know they had hope and everything, and we wanted to keep that hope alive. So I took the liberty of BSing you. Lights, oh no, that's a lie, it's just BS.
If the Australian minister was not there, he's probably out there, capital of Victoria, but getting bitter while he sells out Victoria. One of the government is in caretaker mode pending the election. Chile and Peru's representatives are apparently not allowed to attend much of the ministerial meeting, and the minister's media conference lasted barely 20 minutes. You know, it's just... it just reminds me of how bills get passed in Parliament. You know, controversial bill... Nobody wants it. And coincidentally, there's only like three or four people in the room doing all the negotiations and all the voting yay or nay or whatever. And basically, like, full on. The king is back. The king is back. And he'll tell us exactly what we want, exactly how we're going to do it. And nobody gets to say Shiite Muslim about it. All right? That's your future. You're a slave. Get used to it. Either that, start resisting it. We'll be right back with hour number two any minute now.